A Pegasus for the Rest of Us. It's Amigos, episode 377.
I'm playing about weeks.
Oh, God. I'm confused.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're going to talk about Pegasus.
Mm.
Now, when you think about a Pegasus,
yeah.
what comes to mind?
Horse wings, whole nine yards.
Well, yeah, that's what a Pegasus is, but I'm talking
What you expect me to say? Oh, yeah, I think
turtle
of a,
wearing a
I
hat?
Think of a brick.
Well, like, but I mean, in what setting do you picture the Pegasus in your mind?
Ancient Greece.
Okay. See, I think of like a heavy metal magazine cover of some barely clothed lady riding a Pegasus, wielding some sort of a spear.
Yeah, why?
That's what I can't explain.
Well, I mean,
that
wasn't heavy metal, as I recall. The chick did ride like a Pegasus.
That's probably why it pops into my head.
Really, your head's just sort of plagiarizing the film. Hey, if you're going to have something stuck in your head, it's not the worst thing you can come up with.
That's what I'm saying.
Except her thing wasn't a Pegasus. It was like a weird flying like lizard horse or something.
Lizard horse.
It wasn't like a proper Pegasus. It was sort of some kind of gimmick. It was like a weird looking. You ever watched a Thundar the Barbarian?
Yeah.
Ookla rides this thing. It's not like a horse. It's more like a weird lizardy looking freak horse. That's sort of what the chick rides, except that had wings.
You know, I'm glad you brought up Thundar, because I've been meaning to ask you about him for a while.
Yeah.
Where does he rank among sort of the Conan cartoons of the 70s? Because there were quite a few of these.
There were?
Yeah.
Well, you got Thundar.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got He-Man, I guess.
Right.
It was really more the 80s. Then you've got the Hanna-Barbera crew. That
right.
had Gloop and Gleep.
That,
and
yeah.
What was that guy's name?
That's what I was trying to think. Yeah.
The Herculoids.
Herculoids, right. So where do you rank Thundar?
Thundar's number one with a bullet, brother. He's way up the list. Oh, you just look at the barbarian kid from Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Thundar number one.
Mm.
Because Thundar acted like a barbarian, right? He dressed like, he had the furry vest, right? He looked like T-Rex, you know?
Like Mark Bolan?
You know, T-Rex, the guy, the singer.
Yeah.
He had the long hair. And also, he just did stupid crap that I like. She'd be like, Ariel would be like, now, Thundar, don't you hit that with your sword. He'd be like, rah! He'd run in and whack, and he'd be like, he'd get electrified, or he'd screw him. You know, that was funny. And he just would get pissed off. Like, that's what a barbarian does.
Right.
They don't just calmly do crap.
They don't think
that.
Before they act.
No. They just run in like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, Thundar hated wizards. Like, barbarians traditionally don't like magic.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's the way it's supposed to be. You know, he runs around with a big freak and a hot chick.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of crap a barbarian would do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The barbarian don't wear a suit, you know, go to the office. They go run around with a hot chick and they plunder crap and they beat the crap out of people.
Would Thundar ride a Pegasus?
Oh, yeah. He'd ride the crap out of a Pegasus, but he'd make it more cooler. Like, he put, like, the, you know, the horse armor.
Like the Battle Cat armor
does
on
that,
him?
Does the horse armor really do much?
Well,
have you ever seen a horse take a direct shot in the face from like a club?
I think it's mostly for ranged attacks.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, a horse can fall to one arrow.
But I mean, their legs don't have armor.
No, but their legs are hard to hit. They've also got bone in them. I think the arrows bounce off of them.
What if you shoot a horse in the butt? Does like armor help?
I feel like the butt is kind of, it's got extra padding. At least mine does.
You've got a horse?
I've got a butt.
Oh, I see. Do you ever wear armor on it?
I don't want to talk about that right now.
Now we're getting too personal.
All right, Aaron. Let's talk about this week's Amiga News. Amiga News.
Campbell Trail. Oh, man.
All right, Aaron. We start off this week with a, you know, we've been talking about the sort of aftermath of Amy West for the past couple weeks, and this is
the aftermath. Like it was like something exploded at it.
An explosion of awesome is
it
was.
Oh yeah.
So this is a walk around Amy West.
Yeah.
This is actually shot in 4K HDR.
Oh.
So it's incredibly crisp footage that we're seeing here.
Yeah.
And Aaron, you know, as we're panning around here, it appears to me that this venue is exactly the size of the venue that we will need for next year's Boat Fest.
Oh yeah.
As you know, this year's Boat Fest was a little bit crammed. It was a little bit tight. We need a little bit bigger space, but not too much.
Yeah.
And this looks like the sort of space that we need. We also need all of these computers to show up at Bug
No
Fest.
Kidding, eh? Because they've got like vampires here, and they've got all kinds of crazy crap. I like to have that guy's beard right there.
You do.
I was very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you're out in Sacktown, brother, you've got more options for a venue.
Yeah.
But this looks nice. They had a lot of good stuff here. You know, it looks good, man. I was very impressed with the way this turned out. It's nice that they had a big turnout and stuff for it, which is cool. It looks good.
Yeah, yeah. And Doug in the chat reminds us, because I forgot who actually shot this. Kevin Bryce shot this. So thank you, Kevin, for a walk around Amy West.
Very nice, Mr. Bryce.
Yes. Oh, I like it. I like it. Now, Aaron, this is the first of two Kickstarter campaigns we're going to be talking about next week. Not this, the one below it.
Oh, sorry. I got excited.
That's okay. And this is the Retro Hour book.
Hello.
Dan.
That's all right. It's Dan. So, as you know, the Retro Hour, they've been at it almost as long as we have in the podcasting world.
It's like almost the same year.
They started in 2015, too, I believe. And they have taken it upon themselves to create a book full of their hardest hitting interviews over the years.
Yeah.
Nolan Bushnell, Dominic Diamond, Jeff Minter, Trip Hawkins, Ken Williams. I mean, these are the biggest names in the industry, pretty much in video game history. Unless you found a way to develop your necromancy and raise some people that are dead, you're not going to find any bigger names than the
guys. I would be raising people in the computer business. I'd be doing some, I'd go out and get Cleopatra and stuff, something like that.
Really? You'd rather raise Cleopatra?
Well, yeah. Oh, who am I going to talk to? Some, no offense, but some dead geek or the hottest woman to ever roam the plains? Who do you want to hang out with?
I don't know.
Come on,
I'm leaning towards the geek.
Get on the trolley.
I'm nervous around women.
You're married.
So, Aaron, this is a Kickstarter that's been going on for a couple days now. I believe that you can get this book if you can get, I think, £15 is the PDF version, and you can get the full print version. Is going to be £30, okay?
Here's a picture of the print. Looks nice.
Yeah, looks real
very
nice.
Very fancy. They got a logo.
This is, I think the first person to really compile a book of interviews like this is probably our boy Neil over at RMC.
Yeah.
Did a similar thing with the Retro Tea Breaks, and of course his Kickstarter did AAA Gangbusters Amazing.
Yeah, I got one of the books myself. Good read.
Yeah, very good. Right now, I have no doubt that this thing is going to make. It's got 21 days to go, and they've raised over half of what they're looking for. They're looking for $29,000, and they've raised $19,000.
Oh yeah, so they're gonna make it. What do you think? It's funny when they're raising money for this book.
Mm-hmm.
Now most Kickstarters are low. You never know, right? But this is like you're buying the book, right? I mean you're guaranteed a copy of the book when you pay the 30.
No, that's not how Kickstarter works.
I mean, if it hits its goal.
You're not guaranteed anything ever on Kickstarter. That's very important to realize.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these guys are solid.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that if you are on the fence and you don't, you know, a book project normally comes to fruition.
Right.
It's not like a video game or something like that. So,
what do you think about selling a book this way? I guess is where I was going.
Oh, it's great because what you do is you build your audience through the hype machine and then you top it up as much as you need to out the door to make sure it hits.
I guess that for me, that I'm thinking to myself, okay, you've earmarked these books at $30 a head.
I don't know how this works. And ideally, the way that Kickstarter works is they use this money to produce the books, so they haven't actually made the books.
Right,
yet.
But I mean, I guess what I'm saying is you've got a built-in indication of how many books you need to make.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
That's the bit. That's not
it.
A bad gimmick.
It's a great gimmick.
You go out and print like I don't know. Let's say you made a Boat of Cars cookbook.
Right.
All right. Which would. God, listen, your wife should be pissed ghostwriting that.
Yeah.
But you printed out, say, 10 million copies, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you only sold 500, right?
Right.
Then you're boned.
This is the genius of Kickstarter.
That's the genius of it.
Yeah.
It's funny because I never really thought about it. But, yeah, I mean, duh, it doesn't work for video games. I'm sure they'll hit the mark here. Mm-hmm. And it'll just keep people in.
Yeah.
Keep on
and there's a reel of testimonials if you watch this video.
They got LGR on there.
Yeah, Kim Justice. this guy.
Oh, geez. And they got
your,
this
your
guy.
Favorite.
Every time I turn around, it's like a horror. Thank God the retro millionaire is on here to make testimonial. Give me a break.
Driving around in his Lexus.
Listen,
look at that panoramic.
I'm on my way to shoot the new Star Wars. Taking some time out of a busy schedule. Get it out. Good for them, though. Don't let this geek take away the overall glory. Because Dan and Ravi and their partner, whose name I can't ever remember.
Dinosaur Pie.
And he's been there forever. It's not him. That's the Dinosaur Pie guy. Simon is from the other show. Whole different show. Yeah. That's a whole different retro gaming roundup.
Retro gaming roundup. Isn't that the?
I listen to retro like all the time. They do all the interviews.
Right.
The other show doesn't do all those interviews. They do some.
Okay.
But Simon is the guy from the other show.
Okay.
You're getting
okay.
confused.
Okay. So we move on. This Joe Fox.
Good luck, by the way, fellas.
Joe Fox. Thank you.
Both those guys have been super nice to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Aaron, Dragon's Lair on the Amiga. Now, I'm sure you watched this video.
Oh, are you kidding me? You better believe I watched. I watched the heck out of it because this was something that was near and dear to my heart back in the day. And they're talking about the genius that managed to port Dragon's Lair. And they actually talked about, I never knew about the guy that did it. Like, there's just this guy. He's like, yeah, I figured out a way to do this. He took the laserdisc, he went to the arcade. He worked out a gimmick, a deal, where he went and took a laserdisc and hooked it to his Amiga. And dumped the whole thing.
Wow.
And he was like, yeah, I think we can make this a game. And so they actually end up, went into talks. He's like, listen, here's what I can do. And they did it. And that's how the original was done. How they talked about how he touched it up and how they made it work and how they compressed the game onto like just a few floppy disks. I mean, if you think about it, it had not been done up to this point. And I was eagerly awaiting the home port of this game because I was such a big fan.
Yeah.
And so that was... I wasn't sure I needed an Amiga until this. Then I had to have one.
I mean, this would blow anybody away.
Yeah, I had to have it. And even though it's not arcade perfect,
if you play the NES version, you'll know how good it is.
He goes into that. Yeah. And of course, I mean, this has been ported to a bunch of systems, including it just got ported to GS, which is great. But I mean, you got to think this is back in the day,
right?
That someone did this. And this guy is a real genius. It talks about the guy, some of the other projects he worked on, and how this all turned out. Great video. I really enjoyed it. I like a lot of the old
modern vintage
gaming guy. I think he does a lot of good stuff. So I highly recommend that one, Bode.
Now, next, Aaron.
Oh, here we go.
Guess what's back?
Sexy time.
That's right. Sexy time. When I think about Chris Edwards, I immediately picture a hot girl eating raspberries.
That's the way I do it. This is just a little preview video. Where the new Pi Amiga 3 is discussed as a trailer shows some of the usage of said item. Listen, I don't have to fill you in on this. It's always gold. I mean, if you're using the Pi and you want to have some Amiga action, this is your baby right here. In fact, I don't know how you could do any better. I don't know how they improve it every year, to be honest with you. But it you know, every year it gets better. I will have to say I've got an SD card exclusively set up just to run this. And occasionally, when I don't use the Mister, I'll pop this in. Because really, this has got tons more stuff than my Mister does. My Mister build does. But good stuff. If you're interested in just checking out what's coming up in the latest incarnation, this will be your baby. And, of course, Chris leads you through it. The mad genius takes you through. Hold your hand. And, of course, you get plenty of... sexy berry eating in the process. I can't help but that he didn't ask me or you to pose for a picture seductively eating berries of some sort.
Yeah.
And I can be, you know, talk to my agent, Chris. We can work something out, man.
Nobody can eat a banana like I
can. Oh, man. That's what I've heard.
Aaron, next up, we've got the Amiga Art Competition.
Oh, man.
You know, this thing.
I was out of town. I missed this thing, Bo.
I caught about the last half hour, 45 minutes of this. And the chat was rocking and rolling. This is one of the biggest events of the year in the Amiga community.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
You got Doug, and check this out. Kevin Saunders.
Yeah.
You see what I did? I remembered his name.
Well done.
Thank you.
Look at Doug.
Yeah. Doug is lit up like a Christmas tree.
Look at Doug's the background behind Doug and all those monitors and stuff.
Yeah.
It looks like he's literally transmitting from the 70s.
He does. He does. He's got the Mission Control headset on,
yeah,
too.
No kidding.
So this is, of course, there are a myriad categories that they go through. Everything from, you know, ray tracing to drawing to photography. I want to give a special shout out to a friend of the show and amazing Amiga Show creator, Anthony Jarvis for winning the photography competition with one of his examples that used the Amiga Color Wheel.
That was from his show.
Yeah, from his show. So, but I mean, this whole stream is worth going back and watching.
Yeah.
Just because there are so many awesome, awesome entrants. It just goes to show you that the Amiga was a system by creatives for creatives, and people still continue to be creative with it.
Listen, I watched just the other day, and I recommend everybody watch this if you get a chance. I watched Pixel Vixen sit down, and just she was just chatting while she was using a D-Paint to draw something, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not normally the kind of guy who would sit down and watch this kind of stuff, but for whatever reason, I sat down, and it captivated me to watch somewhat competent somebody sit down and draw in front of me. It was very impressive. I've watched about 20 minutes of this so far. I kind of watched the very beginning of it. It's amazing that this stuff could be done like this. I mean, it blows my mind. It's not like you're making art. You're like, well, that looks pretty good for like the 80s. It looks good now.
Right.
It's great now.
Right.
Like, tune's good now. Animation's good now. It's all good now. And as usual, Doug has outdone himself this year. Well done, Doug. I know Doug's in the chat. Good job, Doug. You always one-up yourself, my friend. And it looks like it went great. And I did hear a lot of great news from him. I happened to be in the sticks that day. I didn't get to see it. So typical, the one day I leave town. But I will definitely finish catching it up. I recommend it.
Now, Aaron, we always hear about these wild demo parties that go on in places like Germany and Poland.
Yeah, they're wild.
Well, guess what? There's one right in our own neighborhood, sort of. Okay? Demo Splash, Aaron, is going on Friday, November 18th and Saturday, November 19th. Which is today and tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. As we record this.
Yeah. This is going on in Pittsburgh at the Carnegie Mellon Commuter Lab. Yeah. So this is... They're going to have a whole room full of retro computers, Sharp X68000, etc. And there's going to be just demos being shown all the time. So
that is nice, isn't it?
Yeah. And so it looks like they are currently offline. I'm not sure what time they're going to get
streaming,
started.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like they're going to get started, I guess, probably pretty soon. You can check that out if you are so inclined. I know I'll probably be checking in a couple times over the weekend just because you hardly ever hear about demo events going on in the United States.
You know, I'm looking at the lineup they've got here. They just have some stuff listed. It says the Sharp X68000, Apple II, Sega Genesis, NES, but, you know, I don't see the Amiga listed. Surely they wouldn't think about having this event. Without the King Dong.
We know that the Amiga was a non-factor in the
United
States.
But for demos?
Listen, people were writing demos in the States on popular machines like the Sharp X68000.
Oh, would you?
Those were a dime a dozen.
Why? Look, copy protection on the Fujitsu MF7 and and FM Towns. They're better. Oh, here it is.
Yeah, there
okay.
you go.
Okay. There's
What's
an Amiga.
Old is new
okay.
again.
Because I was going to get in the car and drive up to Pittsburgh with a folding steel chair. Start whacking somebody. You don't have a demo in our neighborhood without the Amiga being involved, brother.
That's true. Aaron, our next story, check this out, okay?
All right.
This is somewhat tangentially related to the Amiga, but I wanted to include it for a couple reasons. One, it stars friends of the show, the Oliver Twins. We've had them on the show before. Of course, the creators of Dizzy and lots of other games for Codemasters.
Oh, yeah. Well, mostly Dizzy.
There's a National Video Game Museum, Aaron. I didn't even realize this. There are like 6 or 7 National Video Game Museums in England. It seems like you can't swing a cat to hit 3 or 4.
I know.
Okay.
And we don't got Jack.
This one is in Sheffield, my old stomping grounds.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I remember this neighborhood that this is in. This is over by the co-op. This did not look like this. This used to be kind of a scary part. This is down on the south end of High Street.
Yeah.
And I didn't like going down there. It was frightening.
Yeah.
But it looks like they've gentrified the area somewhat. And they've opened this National Video Game Museum. And, of course, like all museums, they're desperately in need of money all the time.
Yeah.
And so, guess what? The Oliver twins decided to donate the proceeds that they made from their Evercade cartridge to the museum. 25,000 pounds, Aaron.
But they did pretty good then.
Yeah.
That's a pretty
now,
decent little cut.
I know you're not the biggest fan of the Evercade.
Well, I mean, I don't hate it. It just, you know, it is what it is.
But you can't deny the Oliver twins, big, big hearts for donating a big chunk of change to the National Video Game Museum.
You know, let me ask you. Yes, I agree. It's very charitable of the boys. These museums, you mentioned that there's quite a few of these things.
Yeah.
I don't know how many big-time museums there are in the States, the United States, but, I mean, I don't know. Probably 20 or 50. Who knows?
For video games?
No,
or
I mean
museums in general?
Museums of computer and video game stuff.
Yeah. There's the one in California,
yeah.
The one in Mountain View.
Yeah.
We have a National Video Game Museum in Texas.
Right.
But that's all. Those are the only two that I know about.
They've also got that computer place that the Elkhart's Boyle and Canadian Retro things you're talking about that they tour.
Yeah, that's not. I don't know if I would put that.
I don't know what that
is.
But my point is, we're vaguely naming a couple.
Right.
And I just watched Kim Justice put a video this week where she toured the meeting, and it was representations from all these like computer museums. Mm-hmm. They brought all these specimens into this like users group or whatever. I thought to myself, if we tried to get specimens sent from, we got nothing. What is going on? And does no one care? Is that what we're so short-minded in America? We don't care about that sort of thing.
Well, I think it's all the fact. It all comes down to the fact that like almost anywhere in England is 3 hours from anywhere else.
Yeah,
and so it's easy
so
to
you
get
don't
around.
Think we could put. We couldn't say call up the mayor and say, "Listen, geek, we need a space for a Boats International Computer Complex, and we need it right now."
Maybe I'll try that. You know, yeah. I was talking to him like
probably
yesterday.
Leave out the geek part. You know, because he's an old retro gaming guy.
He is. He's a big Atari computer guy.
Here's the way I figure it. So if we don't get any action, we send paparazzi over.
That's right.
To smack him around.
We kind of have we roll with the new crew now that we're involved with BGW and people.
That's right. That's right. So if we want stuff to get done, I would recommend that. And by the way, I do recommend, if you haven't seen it yet, Kim Justice's new video is quite good, Bode. If you haven't seen it yet, whether you like Kim Justice or not, you should. But she just tours, and you're seeing stuff like NASCOMs and stuff me and Brent covered that I've never seen.
Still one of my favorite episodes of ARG.
Oh, well, thank
the
you. But you see, and this was a big industrial NASCOM. They used it for something like in a factory. But all these computers, even Bletchley Park brought stuff over, which
They didn't get any better.
They're like,
than that. Yeah.
They topped everyone. They brought their computer from like 1943 or whatever.
Right. Here's like the original code breaker.
You know, win. Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff they get over there. I would love to go see a computer museum. We've got a radio museum nearby that has a couple of computers in it, but it's not even close.
I've still never been to the radio museum.
Well, that's why people need money all the time. Because people like you, Bo.
Yeah, I'm lazy.
Speaking of big money.
Speaking of lazy. Our next story, Aaron, this is our last story, and this is our most controversial story of the week. So I'm really interested to get your thoughts on this, okay? Why do you not see it?
I don't know, but go ahead and talk about it.
Refresh
it
the
out.
Page.
Yes, Boat. There it is.
Go. Okay.
This is controversial?
So, Stephen Jones.
Oh, here we go. I didn't know about this, yeah?
So, Stephen Jones, maker of the, probably most famous for his project called the Checkmate Case.
Yeah.
This is a thing that you can house your Amiga 500 in, as well as a Pi, Mister, etc.
Yeah.
He is in the process of kickstarting a retro-inspired flat panel monitor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched probably a 10-hour video, it felt like, where he went over every minute detail.
Now, this is a modular system. So when you buy it, you choose what sorts of components you want it to come with.
Sort of like the Checkmate.
Yeah, yeah. Very much like the Checkmate. And so you have the option of, of course, your typical composite, S-Video, SCART, VGA, etc. But then there's also some more esoteric things, too.
Yeah.
This thing has a, it can handle all of the different refresh rates, 15, 30, etc. And it is a 19-inch flat panel display. Now, why is this controversial?
Yeah, I was wondering about this too.
Well, if you go down here and you start reading through this, it says display panel not included in reward price.
Oh, that is controversial.
Yeah. And, I don't know if that is, if that's a separate purchase or if that is how that works. I do know this, Aaron. He is charging over $300 US for this monitor.
It says here, I'm reading this thing. It says, this is because part of the budget is to enable the search for two other panel options, a lower cost one, and then a default panel. So this is an actual Kickstarter where you're not necessarily buying the product.
You're saying that you believe in it.
This is what Kickstarter was sort of
right.
meant to be,
right?
Technically,
right.
What he's doing here. Now, with all that said, and I'm sure he goes into this, at 300 pounds for a...
269 pounds, $319.
Yeah. 300 buckaroos, 300 plus buckaroos for basically effectively an empty case is that's a tough pill to swallow. Now, Steven has built up immeasurable goodwill over the years because his Checkmate case was a blowaway success. It was very, very popular. And I certainly wouldn't disparage him. And also, he's a good guy. With all that said, this is going to take a special sort of person with a lot of money and faith to send this down the line. I noticed that he's asking for 250 large, 250,000 Somalians. That's big wad, mm-hmm. but a quarter of a mil mm-hmm. for the lay people. And he's only raised about 38 large with 20 days to go. Now, he's got plenty of time.
Yeah.
However, this is not the best time in Europe to try to get, and this is where this is going to be mostly sold. Let's face facts. This is not the best time to try to do a fundraising project in Europe or really anywhere. Times are tough, brother. And so this may be a difficult sell. Like I said, I have faith in Stephen because the Checkmate was very popular. We know people that have them and really love them, right? And they were also an expensive gimmick. So there's some people out there that are just into his projects.
Yes.
With all that said, you know who you are. And if you're interested in backing something like this, another problem with this is going to be, and I didn't watch him talk about this, video I watched was months ago, mm-hmm. all right? I know that buying parts and getting stuff like that is tough, but it's funny to me that they can't get a panel because I see those panels go for, I'm assuming, and I remember this was mentioned, due to the way the Amiga and whatnot, you're going to have a panel that has certain frequency mm-hmm, requirements,
right. and that's
probably the crux of the issue. Now,
right.
I don't want to sit here and speak for Steven because he knows. If you watch the Kickstarter to get the full scoop, I'm just guessing that's the problem. Because we know you can get these flat panels. I can go out to get a flat panel monitor for practically nothing.
But here's the thing: I think that he wants to get he wants a source of new flat panel monitors, not some from state surplus.
Oh no, I'm talking about you can get a flat panel monitor for pretty cheap.
But can you buy them in the quantity that he needs that are that old 4x3 format? That's one.
They're specialized.
The other thing is that it's got to operate on all the different Hertz frequencies.
I think that's the real business. Right
and
there.
So in the but the thing is the thing. Would I possibly pay $300 for a mega monitor?
I know you wouldn't.
No. But
0%
there's a lot better chance that I would if I could buy it from a storefront. When you're kind of releasing these funds into the Kickstarter, you are guaranteed nothing. And Steven, despite all his best efforts, may not be able to source these things. He may run into supply chain issues. It may end up being years.
Yeah.
Before you actually get this
thing. At the ZX Next team.
Right.
They've been toiling away day and night to try to fulfill that second wave order, and they still haven't done it.
Right.
It's tough sledding out there, and that's what I'm saying. Pushing this right now, tough.
Yeah.
And it's going to be an uphill battle. He probably knows that, and I'm sure that once, depending on how this plays out, I don't want to hose him. It may do great. He may hit the mark with no problem, but if it doesn't, by the time he spins it around again, he may have a more retooled and well-thought-out gimmick to go along with it, because that's tough sledding. There's
right.
no doubt about
right.
that.
So we wish Steven the best, and we'll certainly be paying attention to this Kickstarter as it goes down the line.
Absolutely, Boat.
Aaron, it's time to talk about our friend Frank at Retro Rewind.
Absolutely.
So, Frank is a Commodore fan from way, way back. He's been a member of the Toronto Commodore Computer Club since the 80s.
Yes.
International television superstar. On the
he was.
Yeah, he was.
When you put it like that, I hadn't thought about it. But yes, absolutely.
He has done it all. He's seen it all. And now he's selling it all.
My God, what a pitch man you are, Bert.
If you are in need of anything that has to do with an Amiga or a Commodore computer or even a Tandy Color computer, you can head on over to RetroRewind.ca and pick it up for cheap, brother. If you want one of those new A600 accelerator cards, you can get one of those. If you need diagnostic ROMs for your Amiga, if you need caps, if you need work done on your Amiga, you can send it to him. He will fix it for you, and he will make it better than new. He'll make it frank new.
That's right. Get right on. And listen, don't listen to us. We're morons. But amongst Frank's customers are the Luminary Amiga types, hardware types, all your YouTube buddies, your Tin Marks, your Chris Edwards, they're all buddies with him. He takes care of a lot of their business. He sells them parts. He sells top quality caps. He sells all sorts of interface items. If you need to put a CF card in your Amiga, if you need slot stuff for your 2000, stuff that we never know, box stuff, too cheap to get into that stuff, Frank's got you covered. Frank is your one-stop shop for all your Commodore and Coco needs.
That's right. You can use the promo code AMIGOS10 at checkout and save yourself 10% off the already low prices at Retro Rewind. We thank him for being an official sponsor of the Amigos podcast.
Yes, sir.
And now, Aaron, without further ado, let's talk Pegasus. The stirring love theme from Pegasus.
Beautiful, man. That brings a tear to an eye right there, Boatster. You know, I like to ask you this before we get into these games. This one, had you ever heard of or played?
Never.
I don't know how I missed this one, because just
this
the
one
name
seems,
alone.
Yeah, yeah.
It screams, Aaron, play this. This is a game that came out in 91, published by Gremlin, of all people. That's another reason I'm surprised I hadn't heard of it. Developed by an outfit called Optimus, as in Optimus Prime. Stunningly, they did a lot than I would have anticipated, including they were involved in some of the Dizzy stuff on the Amiga, Mean Machines, and some other stuff. Seymour Goes to Hollywood, some of the stuff I recognize. Of course, Gremlin, they were involved on all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. Too much to mention on here. This game designed by Neil Hill, Adrian Ludley, and Darren Falkus, and coded by Neil Hill, and music by our old buddy Barry Litch. I mean, Barry, we've run into him more than a few times. Over the times that we've done the show, I like a lot of his stuff.
Lotus 2, that's all you gotta say.
He's one of the guys that doesn't get Nightbreed, so they're not all winners. but he's one of those guys that doesn't get as much DAF as he probably should.
Yeah, I mean, you got Brimble. I kind of push Brimble to the side.
No,
I'm a Barry Leach man.
Now, listen to me. Don't badmouth the master. So, we got to talk about the opening of this game. Okay, now, I know, I saw this being discussed in the Discord, so I'm just going to kind of let you jump in here. Tell the people about this cinematic, dramatic opening of Pegasus.
So what you have is most of the screen... Okay, first of all, you've got a very poorly scanned, it looks like picture of the Pegasus, of the man riding the Pegasus. There's laser beams firing out and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's like a rock album. Sort of.
It's like a bootleg rock album.
That's right.
Cover.
Like, yeah. They couldn't afford to print it high def.
Right. And so then you have the screen goes blank and you see kind of a scrolling scroll, if you will, at the bottom. You get a nicely animated introduction of your guy. And I'm not going to lie to you. He looks to be of the same ilk as our man Lionheart.
I knew you were going to bring Lionheart into this somehow. This is like Lionheart's poor relation, basically. You're right when you said it's a scrolling scroll. That's exactly what it is. It's a scrolling scroll at the bottom. But then it gives you the story in this. And the story is, long story short, Perseus has to go. He hooks up with his wizard buddy who sets him up. Armor, magic sword, magic horse, whole nine yards.
Now, I'll tell you who they did not employ in this game was a copywriter. Because there are 8 to 10 typos in this, including the final sentence, Perseus knew what he had to do. Knew spelled N-E-W.
That's all. So, close enough.
Yeah.
Listen, it's like Ed Wood. You know, people just want the big picture. I don't care about those little things.
Yeah.
Because you're going to go save the whole world from all these end bosses. You got to take care of now. when this game got picked, I never heard of it, and I didn't know what to expect. And so I'd seen little video highlights of it. And the videos I saw were mostly like Perseus on Pegasus, and it's like a side-scrolling shooter, mm-hmm. right? And then, and so you can imagine my surprise when he dismounts this thing. And then it becomes a whole different sort of game. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the actual shooting aspects of the game first. You ride the horse. I think the horse is well animated. It looks cool. Your guy looks just like a guy on the horse. And this thing has parallax scrolling.
It's got parallax scrolling, but it's poorly implemented.
Well, I mean, it's low-end parallax scrolling.
What you see is you see, clearly delineated, you see the three different sections of the screen scroll by at different speeds. It's sort of like baby's first parallax.
Well, I mean, this is like, you remember talking about Lionheart's low-end PAL? This is like Lionheart's low-end backdrop, basically. Yep. Like we can't quite afford Lionheart backdrop. But I mean, it's not bad.
Listen, that's the worst thing about this. The character sprite animation. I mean, people go on and on about Agony and how great Agony is. And I'll tell you, the owl looks cool.
Yeah.
But the enemies in Agony blow chunks.
Well,
okay. The enemies in this game actually look good. They sort of look like objects, and they have discrete animations. There's a certain amount of variety here. So I would actually put this game several rungs above Agony.
Well, I think it's more playable than Agony. I will say that. I don't think it's quite as pretty, but I mean, in some ways it's prettier. The graphics of this are weird because they're not bad graphics.
Yeah.
But they're almost great, but they're not quite good. There's a weird void where they exist.
It's the uncanny valley.
It is. And the parallax scrolling stuff, it's not the worst. And there's, levels have different backgrounds.
It is sort of the worst parallax scrolling.
No, gosh, we've seen worse than this, I'm sure.
Because like, it's either you don't have it at all or you have it and it looks good.
But this has multiple layers.
Yeah.
You know.
That's what parallax scrolling
right,
is.
Right, but I mean, this has tons layers. Of layers. They're
it's
going
got
crazy.
Three layers.
Oh, that's more than two.
That's true.
You know, and so... But I thought the shooting part of this was actually, well, I thought both parts had their ups and downs. But so there's a shooting part. And eventually, Perseus lands the old peg.
Yeah, he does.
Lets the peg eat some grass, have a cold one. Then he hops out on his own to go across these various landscapes. Now, Perseus controls pretty good, I thought. You've got your sword. You've got your special pickups that you can get. Also, you can get those when you're on the Pegasus. And he'll come across various creatures that as he runs through. What would you equate this running section to?
This is very similar to like the first Wonder Boy game. It's incredibly, incredibly simple. To call it platforming is sort of doing it a favor. You're basically running across a horizontal landscape in which you have to jump some pits.
Well, they get into some different aspects.
Now, I'm only talking about, the stages that I saw. I was able to skip around.
Yeah.
You know, they did make it easy with some various cheats and passwords.
Yeah, thank God. Because I don't know how far you can get on your own. But
I will say that I liked having, I'm all about variety in my games. Give me a variety and I'll forgive almost anything.
Yeah.
And being able to get off the horse and put your suit of armor on and go to town, I thought that was cool.
Me too. Yeah. I was stunned. And the thing is, when you dismount, it's a pretty cool animation of your guy getting off the horse.
You see him, he kind of puts the air brakes on and it goes down. Yeah.
You know, we can both agree that the graphics are not bad. And the animation on the horse and the guy are good. And the controls, I thought, were pretty tight. Now, let's talk about the things I didn't like. The enemies in this are... Listen, they're not the worst enemies where they just randomly do stuff, but they're irritating enemies. They're very similar, actually. You mentioned Agony. They're sort of maybe a step up from Agony.
Yeah, they're better animated than Agony, but they have the same patterns.
They send the tendencies, and it's just weird crap.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also sort of cheap. I thought the hitbox in this was pretty rough, too. And you're a big character, so it's easy to get hit. You can barely get nicked, and you get hit. Thank God it's not an instant kill.
Yeah, you do have a life bar in this
game. Yeah, which is... that's something they did right. There's also lots of weird pickups. The majority of the pickups are diamonds. I never got enough diamonds to figure out what exactly the diamonds did.
I think you can use those to power. Like if you hit the space bar, you can turn into like a dual shot.
Yeah,
your shots go like this.
Is that what's up? So the, I've done also, that, and then but you I didn't also know the diamonds were related.
I don't know, like because a lot of times you'll pick up stuff. It'll just be there, and I don't think they do a very good job of differentiating between the different kinds of power ups. You can tell that they are different, but I wish they would have made them different colors.
Yeah, there's tons, and every time you kill a group of enemies or a big enemy, they'll drop a diamond, and it just goes into your collection. And occasionally, they'll drop other things. One of which is like a super nuke, and one of them is like a super weapon. If you hit the space bar and you do that, like, you know, super weapon, mm-hmm. you can also pull the old hybris. I don't know if you knew this.
Well, yeah. Well, if you just hold down the fire button, it'll shoot that thing.
Right, right, right. So that gives you an option that doesn't involve you having to do that. Sound. What do you think of the sound on this?
It's an Amiga game.
What do you think of the love theme from Pegasus that we
this
played?
This is a game, when we talk about it seems like every time we review a shooter, shooters are games that you need to have a soundtrack.
Yeah.
You've just got to have a soundtrack. And this game does not have a soundtrack.
Yeah.
All you get are their typical Amiga sound effects.
I mean, I thought they were okay.
They're not bad. They're okay. They're serviceable. But I would have played this game a lot more if it would have had a pump and tune behind it.
Yeah, it is a shame. And the thing is, we know they can do it.
Yeah.
So there's that. What did you think of the ground-based enemies? And because I thought those were real cheap down there.
Yeah.
They rain stuff from the sky randomly. Junk pops up real quick.
It's pretty clear that they developed Pegasus, obviously, to be a flight-first game. I think most of their energy went into creating the flight-based levels.
Yeah.
And they were like, man, wouldn't it be cool if we put them on the... what's his name? Perseus?
Yeah.
Perseus, if we let Perseus run around on the ground. I found that the enemies on the ground, like you'll have some enemies that literally they just fly across the screen. You've got enemies that jump right in front of you and then they just stand there and do nothing. I was not nearly as impressed with the enemies on the ground.
Well, I just thought they were just cheap. That's my thing. I hate cheapness in a game, and this has it in spades. I mean, but really both sides of the coin have it. With all that said, though, you get a lot of gameplay here. I mean, there's tons of levels. There's like a set of levels and a boss, and then it changes the environment to a next set of levels.
And here's the thing that you never see in a Euro shooter, fair difficulty curve. Like, I was able to get past the first stage with no problem. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked out of my mind.
Oh, gosh, I got way past that one.
I got way past it, too.
Yeah.
And the stages gradually got harder as you go. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, this is a game that, with some practice, you could probably be a pretty good hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got continues, which is nice. You get a certain amount of continues.
This game is not, you know, we're going to go into the reviews later. This game is not particularly well-liked. But to me, at least when I looked at Lemon, looked at the reviews on Lemon, to me, this is a game that is, I mean, to me it ranks, you know, I put this top five in the Amiga shooters that I've played.
Is this something going to get covered on the boat platforming
thing? No, because this is not, it's not a true platform.
Well, I mean, there are bits where you actually jump off platforms as you go through, and moving platforms and stuff, too. It's sort of in there. I'm trying to wiggle it in, is what I'm saying.
Listen, I've got enough to cover without this.
This is one of those games that I feel like we somehow missed out, because this is actually not a bad game at all.
Not at all.
I'm thinking of the best shooting games we've played. It's not in that category.
Well, okay. What are the best shooters on the Amiga? So the first one that comes to my mind is Apidia, okay? Then you've got like the R-Type port, which is pretty good.
Well, Deluxe Galaga would be.
Well,
I
don't count that. That's a different sort of shooter.
No, I mean it's still a shooter, though.
I'm talking about horizontal.
Hybris is
I'm talking
in
about
there.
Like I would count Hybris. Galaga is a. It's an arcade.
Yeah, but I mean it's not really. It's called Deluxe Galaga, but it's not all that much like Galaga.
But I mean, I would put Hybris in there. Hybris is good. But I mean, let's narrow it down to horizontally scrolling shooters.
All right, you've got UN Squadron is in there. You've got. When you ask me to think about stuff, that dragon shooter that you can play, that's pretty good. It's in there.
You got Silkworm.
Silkworm, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this ain't that good.
No.
But I mean, in some ways, it's way more ambitious.
And this
than a
is
lot
an
of
original
those.
Property.
Project
too.
X, thank mm-hmm. you, Mitch. Battle Squadron. This is the thing that this does, though. I know we kind of poo-pooed it, but the when you land, it really is a different flavor to the game because it's not all just running across a landscape. Right. There's parts where you go in caverns. Mm-hmm. There's parts where you go in castles. There's parts where you go in fire pits.
Yeah.
And so that gives you a little something different. And I'm kind of like you. Give me a little something. And what I like is, like, a lot of these games, they'll tack on, like, one level. It's like, look, it's a surprise bonus level.
And they'll put it in, like, level 98, so
yeah,
you'll never see it.
Yeah, you're never getting there. Yeah. This one gives you, you get to do the other level, and it gives you a little break from mm-hmm. the Pegasus levels. Mm-hmm. And they're not, even on the Earth levels, they're still doable. They're beatable. They're fun. The graphics are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so it's, but it puts you in a weird spot on these. Because it's like, what if... it's not got everything it needs to be like a top tier title, mm-hmm. but it's got a lot going for it. The way that Perseus is animated when he runs, I will say when you start doing the pretty much after the second level, the running parts, there's a lot of pinpoint accurate jumping. Jumping gaps, and there's you don't get a do-over.
There's also not a lot of definition between where sort of cliffs yeah. end and begin.
That's
and
true.
You can easily find your way just kind of running off the edge of something without realizing.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to actually stand there, and because there's a couple pits where like, you're like, how do I get across this? Well, something will float down mm-hmm. or something, and you can jump on that. But even I found that jumping on floating platforms and stuff, by the way, we should mention this is up for jump. And so... You know, I'm sure there's a way to...
Well,
I saw a checkbox.
I had it mapped to the pad. So
I saw a checkbox for... to
enable
initiate.
CD32
yeah,
controls.
But I didn't get the extra button. I don't know why.
Oh, I use the extra button all day long, so...
It's funny. This is one... I played this on the Mister this week. I didn't even have this on my Amiga Forever collection, so I didn't have any save states at all.
Oh.
So I'm like you, I had to sort of cheat.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite level as you went through this?
I played a little. I mean, to be honest, you know, there's a lot. You know, again, you're not. It's not like each of these levels they're rewriting the book, but
yeah.
I found the variety to be really good.
Yeah.
I mean, each one really looked different than the one that
and
came
before. There's different. There are some different enemies that come out. Which is nice.
A big problem is that the enemies are on the screen for such a short amount of time, and a lot of times they move so frantically,
yeah.
you can't really see what they are. It just like it looks like a confused mess of pixels.
The enemies in this, they remind me of something. But they are. They're cunningly devised to screw you.
Mm-hmm.
These are not. So they're that kind of certainly like a Rygar or something where they're going to come get you. Some of the enemies, by the way, they range from teeny tiny enemies
yeah.
in the sky. To like big stuff.
Right. There's a huge variety.
There's
again,
like
variety.
Statues, mm-hmm. and there's big like wolves or mm-hmm. whatever that come out. They're real cool look. I mean, pretty cool look.
Yeah.
I guess they're real
yeah.
cool, but they're pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your. This is not going to reinvent the wheel. You've got your deserty phase. You've got your mountainy phase. You've got your snowy phase. You've got your
cityscape,
and you've got your fires of hell because mm-hmm. You're fighting Satan.
Yeah, you're actually. Yeah, we didn't mention that, but
yeah.
you are. You're fighting Satan. They actually call him a demon named Satan. As
yeah.
if they just put Satan, you wouldn't know who they were talking about.
They had to specify that Satan was involved. How would this? You know, this came out in '91. I know this is a loaded question. How would this have fared on like in the with the console crowd?
Oh, I get okay. '91 is the year the Super Nintendo came out.
Okay,
this would be right at home for on the first year of the Super Nintendo.
Really?
Absolutely, 100%.
That's a non-burial.
This
from you.
This would be. I mean, if this came from some I don't think Nintendo as a publisher would put out a game like this. But surely there would be tons of Japanese public. I can see a Japanese studio. Putting this game out, for sure.
I'm actually surprised to hear you say that, Bud, if I'm honest. I thought you were going to bury this thing.
No,
well, good for you, man. Just as an FYI, I looked. This actually got an Atari ST port, Bud, if you can believe that. The ST didn't fare as well as the Amiga did in the backgrounds, apparently. It looks like it's maybe the backgrounds are still loading, or maybe that's just that one screen.
Doesn't look good.
But
I can tell you that.
It pretty much, it doesn't look
well,
like it runs.
Looks
quite
like
as
it's
well.
Running kind of slow.
Yeah. So your mileage may vary on the SD version. Maybe one of these days we'll get
yeah.
around to it.
And of course, you never know what kind of machine this was recorded on, etc. So.
Yeah, yeah. You got a valid point there, Bo. But still, I mean, and that's the only. So this is really a pretty exclusive title, much like also much like a Lionheart.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to just load this up on your DOS machine.
No.
This is something you got to play on one of the big two,
mm-hmm.
and so you could do worse. I'll look this up on the old Lemon to see how we did. This thing, I mean, it is stunningly. It got a 6.13.
Yeah, incredibly low.
I was surprised it got that score that bad. I mean,
Here's the thing. Okay, look at some of these reviews. Never played this game back in the day. Okay, so obviously there's people here that are reviewing it in the typical Lemon way, which means they look at it for 5 seconds, they say crap,
well,
and they give it two
that.
Stars.
I do like this guy. Not a waste of time. That's a ringing endorsement for that. In the magazines, it didn't fare that much better, if I'm honest. Amiga Action gave it an 85. Amiga Computing gave it an 80. Amiga Format dropped the hammer, 61. The Joker wasn't having it, 64. Amiga Power, 69. The average magazine rating, according to Lemon, was a 68.
Yeah, I mean,
I think this is at least a C game.
I think this is a B.
I'd say a B.
Yeah. This is one of these times where I flat out disagree with all of those scores.
It's strange. What is wrong with us? Why do games like this resonate? I mean, is it just because it's so different than what you're used
to?
Yeah. I mean,
it does what it sets out to do competently, and it offers you variety, and it offers you a variety of art.
I mean you've got to be. It is the. I mean, I will say that. Like I said, the hitbox is a little bit cheap, but I mean, it's not even close to the worst.
No.
I mean, we've played much worse games, platforming and. Shoot 'em ups, and I think this is somewhere that makes it kind of fun.
Yeah.
I didn't know how you were going to take this. I'll be honest with you. I was like, is Bo going to kill this?
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I'm so happy because I was afraid you were going to murder. Now, what did the Discord folks say?
Pajaco6502 writes, part shoot 'em up, part action platformer. There's a good chunk of Castlevania, Ghosts and Goblins, R-type and Gradius-type action to be had, and the mix makes for an interesting game. I really didn't get what the diamonds were for, and even though the Amiga really only had one fire button, having to use the keyboard to switch weapons always breaks the flow a little. Graphics are way too brown. Even the C64 is looking at this and going, cut back on the brown. Pajaco.
Did you think that?
No, Pajaco. listen, I'm always ready to bury the C64.
I know
but,
you are.
Is there brown? Yes, but it didn't have that purple slime tint that the C64 has. So, continuing with Pajaco's review, it says a few little glitches and presentation issues here and that really stopped this one from shining, so the whole thing feels more like a high-end PD game. Oh, burial.
Man, that is a burial.
But ultimately, another one worth checking out for something a little different, 7 out of 10. Lobsterminator writes, this is not my genre, so when I came across a game where I make good progress, it's always a sign that it's way too easy.
he's been nurtured at the teat of Amiga.
That's right. Pegasus is an enjoyable enough shooter, but lacks professional polish. Everything from the horribly typo-infested intro story to the uninteresting patterns of the enemies just screams half-butted. The walking stages felt like a necessary chore to me, and they interrupted the flow of the more entertaining shooty stages. The power-ups were pretty bland at first, but when you got hawks flying by your side, your arsenal started to feel pleasantly satisfying.
Yeah.
As a non-connoisseur of this genre, I still enjoyed it, even though I acknowledge its flaws, largely thanks to its forgiving difficulty. A game I might fire up in the future. 6 out of 10.
Wow, so he liked it. It sounded like he liked it way more than Pachaka, but he gave it a lower score.
Right. And see, you never can tell with people. So
I would say this, like I said, I like this is a good B title. It's a sleeper, boat. This is a sleeper.
It is. It's a real sleeper.
Just for fun, I looked this up on the eBay to see what I was going for. So get this, boat. A boxed copy of this was sold that was sealed. Where'd you find that thing at? $100 for a sealed
Australia,
copy.
Looks like. That's where you find
the
it.
The rest of these, you're looking at, they're all in the ballpark. People are asking 58 and 40 and 30, but these have gone for 25 buckaroos. If you look around, you might catch one. So there's they must have sold enough of these out there to where they're not super duper duper rare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I will say, I like the box art.
Yeah.
You're right. It's super metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think I would have went more in that direction with some cool metal tunes to play behind you as you're kicking that butt.
Right.
Especially when some of the levels where there's like fire or there's lightning. You want to hear like...
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, that would have been awesome.
Why can the Amiga not generate a good...
The years we've been doing this show and the fact that we've suffered through so many games and have continual cool music on the cool music machine.
Right.
And the ST is even more confounding. Yeah. They both confound me. And yet, occasionally, we'll play in a ZX game with cool music.
Yeah, and like, it's better than now all over the place.
And the C64, say what you want about the brownness, but there's cool music to beat the band.
All over the place. All over the place.
Irritating, but yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a pretty decent little game, my friend.
Well, speaking of irritating, Aaron, why don't we go on to see what's been going on the old YouTube channel this week?
Just say it like that. That's horrible. So, we had a... Wow, it's weird. Anyway, that's set up right
there.
We've
got an interesting choice of window.
Yeah, no
on this
kidding.
Screen,
so too. we had a decent amount of week. Let me see if I can fix it. There we go.
We also have an OBS issue if you look over here at the
No, thing. It always does that. That's
okay.
No problem.
Okay.
Oh, that is weird. Yeah, hold on a second, everybody. Let me fix that. We've had a you know, what happens, Bo, whenever Windows updates? It's crazy time all the time, unfortunately. So that causes us all sorts of wacky problems. There we go. So
man. Also, it seems like there's a tornado that just touched down outside.
Yeah, we're out in the arcade today, and so there's a football game going on, there's a dog running around, and there's a train going by. So this is what you get. Amigos to the core. Let's talk about what me and the Brent did this week, which was roguelike games. But now, you said you watched this. So what'd you think of this one?
This one was one of my favorites because I love it anytime you do a classic Macintosh game.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of people that cover the classic Mac scene.
Yeah.
And also, I love roguelikes. So this was a match made in heaven for me. And you covered a game that I never heard of that I want to play, Telegar.
Yeah, so we put Brent, I was giving Brent credit for really going outside the box and picking something for the Mac, Scarab of Ra. Ra, Ra! And then I went the other direction and played the DOS port of the original port from a college computer at Purdue of a game called D&D, and this game was called Telengard. This is one of those games, I remember seeing the box for that, and I was like, oh, man.
It looks super
and
awesome.
And I remember downloading it and being like, oh, man, because I wasn't into this stuff. But I did enjoy playing it this week, and it's, which is good because you can enjoy it for about the 4 seconds you're alive.
You get a lot of games in for your time.
Before you get brutally murdered. But we had a good time. We recorded a little late this week, so if you didn't catch it, it's up now on the channel. Boat, did we release anything... Oh, yeah, we had the ST show.
Yeah.
We got some breaks to talk about that. Tell them about it, Boat.
So on the Atari ST show, we covered a game called Starquake. Starquake is an 8-bit, most famously on the 8-bit computers, the ZX Spectrum, the C64, etc., the CPC. This is a game, it's sort of an open-world action-adventure title that somehow found its home on the 16-bit computer. And it plays just as well as it did in 1985, which is not what you want in 1988.
You know, I went back and I don't often go back and listen or watch one of our shows. I listened to this on my way to prison the other day, and I felt like I came down kind of hard on the XT on the ST, I should say, and on this game. But now that I've had time to think about, get this out of here. Bring on the good stuff. This is a ZX Spectrum game for like 83 or something. Too far in. We need something a little bit more interesting.
So if you are not a frequent listener to the Atari ST show, the times are changing and we are moving away from the ST game that did not get an Amiga release thing. And we're opening it up to everything.
All bets are off.
And the game should start to ramp up in awesomeness.
Well, we can hope. Because we've had some real duds. It's been really up and down.
Oh, it's sort of like every show that we do.
Well, that's true. You're not wrong there. Now think about it. Over on the Amigos stream team, we just had one this week that's been released. This is our good buddy, the Flagstaff, Jack Flack, who played a little bit of Mortal Kombat Trilogy, Mortal Kombat 3, and then he really topped it off by playing some god-awful Mortal Kombat 4.
Now, you've talked several times about Mortal Kombat 4.
Yeah.
I've never played or seen Mortal Kombat 4. What was it about it that made it so much worse than
3? Well, it was in 3D.
Okay.
And it was in that sort of... it's when you take a great 2D game and you smush it violently in the 3D. Some games don't make that. I mean, look, Capcom tried to do it with Street Fighter, and they weren't that successful, and Mortal Kombat wasn't either. And I was telling Brent, you know, we did a show a couple weeks ago, one where we did Carnival, and to put it in perspective, Mortal Kombat 2, one of the highest selling games of all time in the arcade, it was a huge seller, and Mortal Kombat 4 sold less cabinets than Carnival. That's how far the series fell in two games. This was a not well-received game, and it was equally not well received on all the ports it got at home. It was just a dud game. Mortal Kombat never was a good transition into the realm of the 3D fighter. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you compare it to something like a Tekken or a Virtual Fighter that was born and bred to be in 3D, this one does not do the job. I mean, it did the job all right. It did the job of stinking. And Flack, of course, is hilarious as always. Always entertaining. And by the way, if you're a Jack Flack fan, I highly recommend you pick up his new podcast where he talks about running the concession stand.
I have not listened to that, but I plan to this week.
We've all been there. Yep. I've ran it myself back in the day. But I never really ran it, but
I've worked at many concession stands.
Listen, Rob's show, and this is, you don't know Flack, if you haven't added this to your podcast catcher, he gets it a little nefarity. I mean, there's some statute of limitations type stuff in this particular tale. I found it amusing.
All right, Aaron, what are we going to play next week?
Let's find out, Boat. Who knows? Oh, man, we're going to play the Odyssey 2? That's awesome.
So, completing our set of games that have the word Odyssey in the title.
Yes. This is just Odyssey, right?
Yeah, this is just old Odyssey. It's platformer week on Amigos. So, join us as we take a look at Odyssey. This was nominated to the Game Selection Committee by none other than Graham W. Bemke.
The W.
So, we leave you this week with the Haunting Love theme from Pegasus. And a big thank you to all of our patrons and Twitch subscribers. If you want to join the team, patreon.com/AmigosPodcast. You get access to our Discord server. You get a nice magnet and Christmas card at the end of the year. It's a good time. And plus, you're helping out this guy. So, I will see you next week. We'll see you next week. And until then, adios.